Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy.
Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Jesse Bell filling in for Dinah Jansen this week. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, and it covers Kingston Council's appeal to the provincial government to address the impact that heritage designations have on insurance rates.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. Kingston City Council is calling on the provincial government to investigate why some insurance companies are raising premiums or denying coverage for heritage-designated properties, despite provincial guidelines stating otherwise. The motion brought forward by Councillor Gary Osteroff came before Council on Tuesday night. This move comes after Council has voted down several heritage designations in the last few months due to homeowners reporting that the designation was jeopardizing their ability to get or afford home insurance. Councillor Brandon Tozzo spoke to this issue when the motion was up for discussion.
I really worry if we don't get figured out the insurance component of this. I really do worry that there will be a heavy backlash in the public against heritage. I think we already are feeling some of that frustration from the community. When we first got on to council, I didn't hear a single person. Now we have people coming in tears about getting their properties being heritage.
In the very same meeting, Kingston resident Terry Shea came before council asking that the heritage designation on her home be removed, expressing that she would not be able to afford the hike in insurance she claims was brought on by the designation.
I've heard many times designations should not affect insurance premiums. However, this is not true. My home insurance is now unaffordable, which leaves me no choice but to come up with a way to make the impossible possible. I've lived in my home for over 11 years with an annual premium of $4,300, and now I'm faced with choosing a policy of upwards of $20,000 or risk losing my mortgage. My insurance broker and I have been declined by an alarmingly high amount of leading insurance companies over the last 6 to 8 weeks. The heritage program that drives homeowners into financial hardship does not build community pride. It creates instability, division, and conflict.
The province of Ontario has stated that insurance premiums should not go up as a result of a heritage designation. In her presentation to council, Shea cited the Insurance Bureau of Canada's brochure, Insuring the Living Past, which states that heritage properties can be more expensive to replace due to the layers of bureaucracy and bylaws surrounding repairing and rebuilding, among other factors. According to the National Trust of Canada, the industry is currently in a difficult spot, having to pay out massive claims due to extreme weather events, and is now going to great lengths to minimize any risks it can. They state older buildings, especially designated heritage buildings, appear to have become a target for this approach. While city staff and councillors have been searching for answers to help Shea and others in a similar predicament gain clarity and find a way forward, Councillor Connie Glenn says they have not been able to find clear answers.
What we keep being told is, well, the Ontario Heritage Act says that this isn't going to happen. It's not going to be a problem if you get a designation. But then we have property owner going to renew insurance and facing a skyrocketing rate. And what we can't get a clear answer on from anyone is this really due to the heritage designation or not? Because we've got a game of what I would call hot potato going on here. I don't want the heritage designation to be seen by members of the community as being a negative. But at the moment, that's pretty much what's being experienced.
The motion calls for insurance regulators, insurance industry representatives, and heritage professionals to work together to find solutions to protect heritage properties without unwarranted financial burden on homeowners, and find solutions to regulate the impact of heritage designation on insurance premiums. With unanimous support from Council, the call for clarity and resolution will be sent to the applicable regulatory and industry bodies, with hopes that Heritage and homeowners will no longer have to be in conflict.
What this motion says is we are fed up with Heritage being a scapegoat for increased insurance rates. And it's time that it's stopped, and that the province, who has put us in this situation, along with the insurance companies, come together and fix it. We all have to live in the community together. We want people to be able to value Heritage and Heritage properties and live in them, but be able to afford to live in them. So please get together and fix it. That's really what this ask is. We've gone, I think, as far as we can possibly go, and the community, I think, will be supportive of getting this sorted out as much as we will.
This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Next, I'll be reading a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about the impact the Eastern Ontario drought has had on members of the agricultural community. Drought conditions this summer have meant more than just brown spots on the lawn to rural residents of Eastern Ontario, where getting water is often not as simple as just turning on the tap. The ongoing drought in eastern Ontario is significantly impacting farmers, leading to crop damage, reduced yields, and potential financial losses. Farmers are struggling with heat stress on crops, a lack of sufficient rainfall for proper growth, and an increased workload due to irrigation effects. Some farmers are even forced to let their crops die due to the severity of conditions. Similarly, hobby farmers, gardeners, and even families who depend on wells for water are struggling day to day with the challenge of the drought. According to Agriculture Canada, in July, Eastern Ontario faced some of the driest conditions in Central Canada. Many areas saw less than 40% of their normal July rainfall, causing drought zones to spread and new dry pockets to form. The hot, dry months have stressed crops and left more than a third of the region's farmland in drought conditions. According to Canada Weather Stats, July 2025 only saw 18.7 millimeters of rain accumulation. Historically, July in the Kingston area averages 12 days of precipitation with 72.2 millimeters of rain accumulation, and August averages 10 days of precipitation with 57 millimeters of rain. According to Brian Windover of Bayview Farms, the drought is already taking a toll on his family-run farm located on the shores of Hay Bay, a mixed farming operation consisting of hay, beef, soybeans, and wheat. The beans, planted on shallow ground, have turned gray and will not even produce any crop to harvest, he said. The ponds used to water the livestock are also a concern, as water levels are dropping rapidly. Urban dwellers might not appreciate how the drought impacts every aspect of life in the country, not just on farms. Many rural homes get their water from in-ground wells on their property. When the well goes dry, that spells trouble. No water for cooking, drinking, no showers, no laundry, and no flushing toilets. The medium potable water fill station at the A.L. Defoe Water Purification Plant in Napanee is constantly encircled by residents with water tanks on trailers and in trucks. This fill station is intended for filling containers smaller than 4.5 cubic meters, or 1,000 gallons. The cost for this service is $2 per 1,000 liters. Users must supply a hose and fittings, which are necessary to connect to the station. Sometimes the wait for water is hours long. On top of dry wells, wildfire is a genuine concern. Napanee resident Landon Savelle has kept up weekly watering of his own lawn out of fear of a grass fire. Quincy Emmons, a fire captain with Stone Mills Township and also the chief executive officer of Fire Rain, shared that Canada is at a level 5, meaning that all fire resources are in use and that firefighters are, quote, at their limit to deal with wildfires. Emmons stated that, quote, fire departments will be initiating mutual aid systems, so in the event of a fire, multiple departments will respond to send water tankers and spread the burden of water resources, minimizing the local impact on water availability. However, Emmons noted, quote, the reality is that if we have a major fire in this area, the provincial and federal agencies are already at maximum capacity. We are close to the breaking point, especially with wildfires burning south of Bancroft and in the Kawartha Lakes region. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Next up, I'll be reading a story from the local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about Mayor John Beddoe's suspension from the Gananoque Police Services Board. The Gananoque Police Services Board has confirmed that Mayor John Beddoe's was suspended from his duties on the board late last year, pending the outcome of an investigation by Ontario's Inspectorate of Policing. In a statement posted to its website last week, the board said Beddoe's suspension began in November 2024 following a formal complaint made directly to the inspectorate. The board did not disclose details of the complaint, citing the ongoing investigation. The board said the inspectorate's findings will be posted publicly once released, both on the provincial agency's website and on the board's own site. On March 4th, council passed a bylaw appointing Councillor Dave Osmond as the alternate council representative on the police board for the remainder of the current term, filling the vacancy created by Beddoe's suspension. The statement marks the first public disclosure of the mayor's removal from the board. The matter came to light during last week's council meeting. The Gananoque Police Services Board said no further information will be provided while the investigation remains active. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Over to the local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island, Ted Evans with a story about a new 10-year Parks and Recreation Master Plan for Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. At their meeting this week, Loyalist Township Council approved their 2024 to 2023 Parks and Recreation Master Plan. According to staff, the plan emphasizes inclusivity, community partnerships, and staffing needs. Estimated costs within the plan total $23.26 million. Public engagement was conducted through various channels, including the township's Engage Loyalist platform. The township heard input from residents, staff, and the Southeast Health Unit. The draft plan was presented to the Committee of the Whole in April and endorsed for final community feedback before returning to Council for final consideration. The plan includes 157 recommendations across programming, facilities, parks, trails, and service delivery. Director of Community and Customer Services with the Township, Lori McFarland, explained how staff and Council will look into recommendations from the plan over time.
We will be looking, you know, at prioritizing based on need and use, avoidance of service redundancy, asset requirement obligations, phased and adaptive executions, and oversight, council oversight and budget alignment. The endorsement of the plan does not necessarily mean that all of the financial recommendations that are here aren't being implemented or being recommended. What it does mean is that anything that has financial implications will have to be looked at through that lens and brought back to council along with every other budget and approved through the regular budget process. And it needs to look at how it fits into our long-term financial plan and all of those key parameters to ensure we're executing it in a responsible financial manner.
Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend noted the importance of the plan going forward.
It's been a long time, and we as council have been a principal driver of seeing this. And we know as council how important our recreation services and programming are to our residents. In the report, the implementation sort of disclaimer and expectations, inevitably, I think, the next incoming council next year will have, challenging financial prospects on all sorts of levels, and recreation is no exception to that. But I think it provides a comprehensive picture of certainly the scope of what the kinds of things that we want to see in the township.
Councillor Paul Proderick spoke about the importance of communication between township departments throughout the plan.
I was happy to see the role that Parks and Rec and culture and the arts can do together. And I think that's something that's important just for streamlining services and not talking in this silo and that silo and not knowing what each other's doing.
Councillor Jake Ennis showed his support for the new master plan.
I think it was an important update to make for the township and to provide sort of a guiding framework for recreation. I think it's a balanced approach. You know, some of the larger investments are pushed out, so there might be some disappointment there. But I think on the other hand, there's some exciting lower cost higher impact positive investments in the shorter term that could possibly be made. So I think it's a balanced approach that council and residents can support, hopefully.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about a new three-year agreement between Base 31 and Quinte Health.
What happens when someone needs critical care as a result of a bad car accident? In Prince Edward County, they are taken to the local hospital, then transported by Orange Air Ambulance to a larger facility, so a helipad is essential in the county. With ongoing construction of the new state-of-the-art hospital, the helipad is closed, but Base 31 Partners has stepped up to provide a helipad on their former World War II air base property. This ensures emergency air transport services will continue as the hospital is being built. Nancy Parks, Back the Build campaign chairperson, acknowledges the gift-in-kind donation.
Base 31's generous contribution of land for the temporary helipad is another wonderful example of the community spirit that powers our Back the Build campaign. While we look ahead to a new hospital complete with an on-site helipad, this interim solution ensures we continue to provide timely care during the construction phase. Support like this builds momentum, it strengthens our campaign, and brings us closer to a great new county hospital that meets the needs of our community. And thank you for standing with us and helping ensure that we ensure that care is received close to home.
Family doctor and emergency physician Dr. Hayward Stewart speaks of the importance of a helipad.
Actually, sometimes you don't get to hear from us, the nurses in emergency, the doctors in emergency, but you step up to this and provide this helipad. Means moments that lives can be saved. And when we have major traumas in this area, we have the ability to send in physicians if we have to through Orange and nursing staff, but to be able to get our people out to critical care. And people don't understand how important that is. So you've heard some people say it. As a physician who works in the emergency and representing our crew down there, we are very grateful for your contribution. And hopefully, when our new hospital is built, we're here for all of you and all our community. But it is very important that we band together as a community and support one another. So we are really gracious of your donation to us, because that is so important every day in what we do.
Asaf Weiss, acting CEO and president of Base 31, responds.
We're delighted to be in this partnership with you. Obviously, we really believe in the long-term prosperity of the county and of the region, and you can't have prosperity without community health, and in this case, capital H health. And so we're really, really pleased to be a part of making the new hospital a reality. I have to say, as a Milford resident myself, and as you may know, most of our team really are residents here. We are cheering on the construction of the new hospital and can't wait for it to be established and open. So we're really delighted to be able to support. I think there's poetic irony to the fact that this is a place of aviation history, and the contribution that we can make in this partnership is to provide medevac access to the skies. So we're really delighted to have the helipad here, and as I say, just really excited to be part of a partnership that helps to build health infrastructure.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca, and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about a Brighton nonprofit hoping to reforest Presqu'île Provincial Park.
A conservation group is seeking to help reforest Presqu'île Provincial Park. The Friends of Presqu'île Park state that reforestation is urgent and needed, as high winds have caused significant damage and downed trees. Dan Riggs, director of grants for the nonprofit group, approached Brighton Municipal Council Monday, wanting support, not financial contributions, as it attempts to secure $50,000 for the project. He explained that emerald ash borer has decimated the ash tree population, as approximately 30% of ash trees make up the park.
You'll see that there's a lot of areas that have no forest canopy, and there's a lot of apparently dead trees. And in fact, there are thousands of dead, dying, and down trees in Presque Isle. So reforestation is vital for maintaining ecological integrity and species conservation.
Riggs said reforestation contributes to climate change mitigation as tree canopies provide cooling effect in the area, refuge for migrating species, and enhance the overall aesthetics of the park and user experience. The organization is meeting with a forester with Trees Canada this week to survey the forest and assess the current park situation and to develop a planting plan. While a three-year project slated to begin in May 2026, Friends of Presque Isle Park would need a motion of support from the municipality to strengthen its proposal through the Green Municipal Fund Tree Planting Grant. Brighton Mayor Brian Ostrander said he supports the reforestation efforts.
I think it's a great opportunity to partner with another organization in an area that we know has been devastated from a forestry perspective.
Council passed the motion. The funding application for the project is due by September 18th. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
Thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Coming up next, we have CFRC's City of Kingston Traffic Report and Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Public Services and Procurement Canada wishes to advise the public that the LaSalle Causeway will be fully closed to vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians to allow for the temporary opening of the main marine navigation channel on Sunday, August 24th from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Here are this week's relevant road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Cataraqui Woods Drive, Rosanna to Holden is closed until August 28th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for roundabout upgrades. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Middle Road, Joyceville to Highway 2 is closed until August 22nd from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. each day to complete culvert relining. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen is closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Woodburn Road, Hitchcock to Whitechurch is closed for a contractor to complete culvert relining. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bayridge Drive, Milford to Henderson. Expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners. Expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle. Expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead struction. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Avenue, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Avenue. Work includes curb, sidewalk, asphalt milling, and repaving. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper. Expect delays while a contractor completes construction of a new sidewalk and road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users. And Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road. This is your Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. Thursday, August August 21st. It's going to be a beautiful sunny day here in the city of Kingston. Breezy in the morning, a little bit of cloud, but mostly brilliant sunshine. High of 25. That actually feels like 25. Friday, August 22nd, daytime high of 24 with lots of sun in the forecast. Saturday, August 23rd, it's looking like it's going to be a perfect day for the Queens football home opener against the Western Mustangs. Daytime high of 26, feeling closer to 27. A slight possibility of rain later in the afternoon, but it should be a beautiful summer Saturday. Sunday, August 24th, mostly cloudy with the possibility of a thunderstorm here in the Kingston region. Daytime high of 24, feeling closer to 25. And to kick off next week, Monday, August 25th, daytime high of 22, 70% chance of rain. Otherwise, sunny throughout the day.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.